Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And D, something stood out to me lately about how the degree to which getting Anthony Davis the ball has really been on your mind. I've been talking to you on a day-to-day basis about basketball for years and years. And one of the many things I love about talking to you is you don't have a ton of agendas, meaning that like kind of these preconceived notions that you have going into a game, you just watch and kind of reply off of that. So when you really get stuck on something, when something's really on your mind, I try to get into that place too. So I thought a lot about our dilemma, right, with AD and kind of getting the ball to AD more and getting him more quality touches and just everything around that. And I think in a lot of our talks, both on the pod and over text thread, a lot of the ideas, like we're on similar pages, we often are. One aspect of it, though, that we haven't talked a ton about that I want to start with that I think is important is I think that one of the best ways to getting more and better quality touches for Anthony Davis is to make the defense pay more severely when they do send extra attention toward him.
Yes.
And when I'm watching a lot of the tape, a lot of pretty much every step that a help defender, along with his primary defender, a second defender, almost every step that a second defender takes is to help on AD into the paint, right? And so there are a couple of different prongs to the long-winded point that I'm making is AD's jumper is often what's available that he's not taking. And if you look, the AD's jump shooting in the championship season was not just in the bubble. He was like a 40% three-point shooter from January 1st on. And I distinctly remember Vogel being like, yeah, we want him taking three or four a game. Yes. And that getting quality attempts on that are – so that's the shot that's often available, in my opinion, to him on one end. Then we need to have better action off of the ball when he has the ball in the post. But the other aspect to it is where I want to talk about Wenyen and the quality minutes that we've seen with Wenyen and AD. In that Orlando game, they're sending a second defender, whether it was Carter or whomever was guarding AD as the primary guy. There's a second guy that's at least one and a half teaming him, right? Soft doubling, not guarding his man, but definitely a step closer toward AD. A couple of times when Wenyen was on the court in particular, and this changed immediately when Wenyen got out there with AD, AD would attack that, and then he would occupy those two defenders, and then like Cole Anthony is left boxing out Wenyen. And Wenyen's just been an absolute monster on the offensive glass over the course of this past weekend, in part, D, because we have two bigs out there, and that to me is a great example of Cole Anthony boxing out Wenyen Gabriel. Is it a great example of the running out of guys theory where you have enough to throw at an Anthony Davis to bother him because he's got so many guys on him, but you don't quite have enough to box out Wenyen Gabriel on the back end. And so Wenyen's numbers, two-man numbers alongside AD have been great. I think that with the urgency in these last 10 games left, these two big lineups, especially with him, man, are a great way to go. So that's me saying my piece, kind of looking at what has been vexing you from a different angle. Curious about what you think.
No, a lot to unpack there. I certainly agree with the first point that you made around AD's jump shooting. This is an idea that we've covered a lot of ground on in the pod before. I certainly agree that when AD has his jumper going, it unlocks a lot of his own offense, and he goes from being a high level to elite offensive player to unguardable,
right,
in his own way. I think finding the right balance between the number of jumpers he takes and his ability to get downhill is also super important. I want his jumper to be something that he's shooting instinctively rather than like, this is what's being given to me. And there's always a fine line between that. I always say that one of the criticisms that Kobe Bryant always got was, well, he wanted to win, but he wanted to win his way. Mm-hmm. It's just like, welcome to being an NBA superstar.
Like, right.
It's not different than Michael Jordan. It's not different than Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson damn near got a coach fired, or he did get a coach fired basically very early in his career because they transitioned from being this up-tempo, I'm playing my style game to like, hey, we're going to walk it up in five down and we're going to throw the ball in to Kareem every single time. Like, it took away the style that was his native style, right? And so AD, I think, has a penchant to float too often. It's in his nature at times to be like, okay, well, I'm going to hang out around the perimeter and I'm going to take what the defense gives me. And so it's a fine line to me because I'm encouraged at times where he just butts his head up against the wall by saying, I'm going to take it inside and play with force. But there's a counterpull to that where, well, that's not what's there this time, and you're playing into what the defense is trying to do to limit you and make your life harder. And so help yourself here a little bit. And is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. So those are the kind of the two approaches, right? Either the take what the defense gives you or the, I don't care if that's what you're doing, we're going to bash through the castle walls type of thing. Right. And so that's why I bring up Wenyan, is that when AD just decides, hey, I'm going to be a monster on the inside, maybe that second player, the attention of those two guys causes a difficult shot and maybe he misses that, but that's going to leave Wenyan, who,
yes,
this has been a thing consistently all year long, and he plays hard every possession, and it's not just playing hard. He plays attentively, so he's going to relocate. If he sees his man leave to go help on somebody else, he's going to dive to the front of the basket. He's going to make the right play almost every single time. And by doing that, AD is clearing space up and using that gravity, even if he misses the shot, to create an advantageous position or at least having Wenyan out there. But if that's Troy Brown in that position or if that's another player, you're not getting that same type of value.
Well, even with Vanderbilt, right? Vanderbilt has been looking to pass so often when he's underneath the basket playing in a crowd, and Wenyan does not play that way. Wenyan's like, I'm in close. Like, Wenyan has improved so much as a finisher with like
left hand, right hand.
You had mentioned this like a month ago, like on the pod, but you had gone to a game and you're watching Wenyan do pregame work. And he's not out there shooting jumpers and doing a bunch of like off the dribble stuff. He's just like mic and drill and like little lefty hooks from like 4 or 5 feet out and right hand finishes
shots
off of the glass. In-game shots, because those are the shots that he's going to take. Every few days or so, the Lakers play a basketball game and there's a portion of the game going on and Wenyan has just done a Wenyan thing for like 3 straight possessions, and you'll just send us a message that says, man, I love Wenyan Gabriel. And so I want to kick it to you here on this idea of the partnership between Wenyan and AD. A, because I know your affinity for Wenyan, but B, I also know your affinity to sort of like skew bigger and like surround Anthony Davis and LeBron with these sort of bigger athletes that are really going to just pressure the hell out of the paint.
Well, in this case, Darius, it's not incriminating what you shared in the private text thread that you usually need to pay extra for. But so that's okay. So this one doesn't get me in trouble. It's fine. I do love the way that Gabriel plays. I mean, so the last 3 games, he's averaged about 25 minutes. And in those 25 minutes, 11 rebounds a game, 14, 11, and then 8. And he's almost always getting at least a couple of steals or a block. He's pretty good in terms of stocks. And then you know, he's always going to shoot a pretty good percentage, which he didn't happen to do against Dallas. He had a couple of putbacks that didn't go in. He was like 3-for-8. But I was talking to him after the last game, just off air, just sort of chatting while we were waiting for somebody else to go out of the locker room. And, you know, he isn't like a pure five, right? That's never how he's played. That's never how he sees himself. He finds himself in this current NBA where, and especially on a team that doesn't really have bigs other than Anthony Davis, who also isn't a pure five, that because I was asking him essentially about, hey, you know, these minutes that you're playing with AD look pretty good. And he was like, yeah, you know, it like he, for to him, it's obvious as to why some of those minutes would work well. And, you know, you guys both touched on some of the reasons why. So I do think that the coaching staff has noticed this to an extent, certainly, because his minutes have gone way up from earlier this month. And I mentioned it's around 25 per game, but it's 33, 23, and then 20 in the last three. And that's a trend that I don't see going back the other way. Now, once LeBron returns, you know, we had that conversation before, but do you put like Troy Brown as your starting two and then just take somebody like Beasley out of the rotation in order to play Wendy Moore?
And Beasley wouldn't even be in my rotation. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. That's in terms of like what coaches do, that ends up typically being more of a drastic thing that even if some of the numbers bear it out, it doesn't end up always necessarily being the most likely, but maybe it's that there's got to be some accounting for what the value has been and sort of, hey, you've earned some minutes where the coach has to find a way to get you on the floor more.
That's one of the funny things about his story this year, D, is that it's been like he was an afterthought this offseason. We barely talked about him in the offseason. It was
right.
Thomas Bryant and Damian Jones, right?
That's right.
And so at first he's battling Damian Jones because TB had gotten hurt. And then, all right, Damian Jones doesn't work out. Wendy's going to play a little bit. Well, we got Thomas Bryant back now. And now Thomas Bryant is elevated above Wendy, right? And then he ends up getting traded. TB does. But we trade for Mo Bamba, right? It's going to be Mo Bamba ahead of Wendy and Gabriel. Wendy and Gabriel has survived and has been the guy that's been overlooked every step of the way and has been pretty awesome almost the entire time. And that point about not being a natural five, I think is a good thing. And when we talk about that Wendy and AD combo, those are two Kentucky dudes that can move their feet. Like they're going to kick your ass on the inside way more than you're going to cook them on the perimeter.
Well, all three Kentucky forwards, right? Mm-hmm. Add Vanderbilt to this mix as well. And so the thing about Wendy is he's not a natural five. He's like a 4.5. Which is perfect for a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis because he can play next to LeBron, and LeBron has had some good minutes with Wenyen. LeBron trusts Wenyen like in the open court. He trusts him as a finisher. He trusts him as a pick and roll partner. He throws that same pocket little bounce pass to Wenyen when he's diving that he throws to AD when AD is diving because he trusts him to catch the ball and make a play on the move. But Wenyen playing next to AD is also this great combination of skill. So AD is such a unique player because he has all of this skill, but he can play with force as well. Like I go back to this possession that he had against the Grizzlies where he basically like armbar locked Jaren Jackson Jr. like underneath the basket and like walked him to like right underneath the backboard, the shot goes off the rim and he just sheds him for an offensive rebound and then goes back up and finishes strong. And Jackson's not a small dude at all. And he's young and like in his physical prime, like that great dude gets defender. After it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I look at him doing stuff like that. And then I also look at him doing these Euro step floater finishes across the lane. And so AD has his great ability to play with finesse or with force. And Wenyen plays with such motor, but he is such a graceful athlete the way that he moves.
And he's intelligent. Yep.
Right. And all that relocation stuff, Mike, like it's just a good partnership between the two. They really complement each other well.
Another thing that I was thinking about and talking to Wenyen about was three-point shooting. And, you know, Wenyen doesn't really see himself, especially in the minutes that he's out there, as having much opportunity to take and work on the threes. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Like we get right back to my whole bigger point about three-point shooting. And it's like, So in the game against New Orleans, at New Orleans, that's an example of, all right, things can look great if you're properly spaced out and the defense is all crashing in and you're getting wide open threes and you're burying them. Wow. You know, look at that. But the games that you have to win, like these last couple games against Dallas and in Orlando, which were lower score relative to like what the modern NBA is, if still over 100 points in both of them. And especially as you get into playoff type of basketball, you're just not getting that many of those open shots. And I always want to get back to the point of, so I think that a lot of the NBA has skewed so scared of wanting, of not having the spacing and sort of having guys on the floor that either can't shoot or don't shoot a lot, and basically sacrificing size and athleticism and motor and some of these things that have been tried and true workers in playoff tight contested type of games, that we keep seeing all of these different small lineups that are trying to mimic like the Golden State Warriors and of like the greatest shooting team of all time. And I just don't, I always find myself looking out there and seeing like a capable, useful, bigger player that's just not in certain lineups because it's thought that they can't properly space a certain way. And, you know, this would be even a case of like Vanderbilt versus Wenyan, though. That's when I can be persuaded, because if there's the negative spacing that you're going to have from Vanderbilt where teams are just going to leave him alone, you can't do that in the same way with Wenyan, because he'll just dive in and actually dunk, you know, and he'll actually go get the rebound. So I'm not making a blanket statement like no shooting ever. I do like it. And I like it in the guys like Troy Brown that can do both. They can play defense and they can shoot when open. It's just I'm basically making this argument for there's got to be those times where like Wenyan is better than you think he might be just because he's not a pure spacer or a shooter. That's what part of the reason why I'm caping for him.
No, it's certainly that shooting is not the only thing that matters, right? Shooting matters, but it's not the only thing that you got to have out there. And in a case of a guy like Wenyan, my attitude is that if you're not a shooter or a floor spacer, can you move your feet and guard capably? Can you guard that on the other end of the floor? That's when that becomes really important. And those three Kentucky guys, like you were saying, D, like throw Vanderbilt into that as well. That sort of perimeter ability, and then you got to box me out on the other end of the floor. Like of all of the little flowers that are starting to bloom from this new version of the team, that's one of the things. We got a lot of motor athletes, which I think is one of those guys that, one of those archetypes that you want to slot between LeBron and AD in terms of building out a team long term. Let's take a break, come back, and keep it going.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
It's funny that we're talking about Wenyan, we're talking about Vanderbilt. I wrote a column, and I think it went up this morning at Silver Screen and Roll. It's a whole column of yes and no's guys. It's four different things that I've liked and not liked as much about the Lakers over the last handful of games or so. And there's a few nuggets that I like in there. I shouted out the Austin Reeves and one video that was put up recently by the Lakers. We might need to give Austin a new nickname of Austin and one Reeves, because he there drawing a bunch of fouls. And so I've got some ideas, but two of the things I hit in there are the Wenyan and AD duo, which we're talking about now, and the idea of Vanderbilt as a wing versus the idea of Vanderbilt as a big. Mm-hmm. And Vanderbilt is this interesting player because he is not showing enough to me as a big man, where he's losing some of his utility as a defensive big. And he is losing some of his utility as an offensive player when he's asked to be too much of a small, right? And so
really well said. That's spot on.
It's interesting because we've talked about Vanderbilt a little bit offline. And Pete, you have raised this great idea that like Vanderbilt's more like a five offensively, but as he's more like a three defensively. And accounting for that sort of player within your lineups becomes super tricky. And it's one of the reasons why him slotting between LeBron James and Anthony Davis makes perfect sense for him.
Yep.
It's because the versatility that exists in the offensive games and defensive games of both LeBron and AD, they can account for all of the stuff that Vanderbilt does well and just be like, hey, do that stuff. All the stuff you're good at, you get to do all of that, and we'll do everything else because we're Swiss Army knives at the highest level, right? Wenyan, on the other hand, he is like a go, 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 and he's going to do the same thing every possession, regardless of who he's partnered with. And that
reliable
consistency is also a great pairing to slot between LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And so I'd love to see both of those dudes continue to be in the rotation and finding time next to LeBron and next to when LeBron comes back and next to AD in regular shifts. And I've been super happy that after Wenyan played well against the Rockets, right? And then when AD didn't play, and then he was great in the second half of the Mavs game, right, where he basically took Rui's minutes and really helped the Lakers climb back in into that game that they ended up giving away at the end, that Darvin said, you know what, this is working with Wenyan and his partnership with AD. And he switched up the rotation to allow for like a 3 or 4 minute overlap between those guys when Wenyan first comes into the game. So I think the coaches see it too, Mike. Like, I think that they see that Wenyan and AD is a viable partnership. And just so you guys know, in the last two games, when Wenyan and AD have shared the court for like 19 minutes, so they've only played 84 minutes together all season. And nearly a quarter of those are in the last two games. Over the season, they have like a plus 37 or something, plus 33 net rating.
It's been so good every time they play.
But in the last two games, that net rating is like plus 50, right? And so these dudes, Mike, they clearly have their peas and carrots, right, for the Forrest Gump fans out there. They just go together. They work together. And so I'm really hoping that this is a trend that continues, because they're going to be able to overpower teams and out-athletic them with size and length in the paint while still being able to cover enough ground defensively that they're not giving up a lot on the defensive end to rangy players and even guards if they end up on switches and everything else.
I just want to make a quick tangent point, Pete, and then feel free to bring us back wherever we want to go. Just thinking about the importance of maximizing those types of minutes and just the pairings that are clearly working versus the pairings that aren't, while also not disrupting kind of whatever rhythm and momentum has been built within these rotations and not changing things up too much, like all of that balance. But last night was an example of sitting and watching League Pass that went a little bit different than how things have been going, right? Where the Timberwolves won, the Jazz won, the Warriors won. Dallas was winning for the entire game until a big time comeback from Memphis sort of secured that. And it's just like this could happen, right? Any number of these teams could go on a streak in the other way. And since they've all been losing, the Lakers have basically gotten away. And I say gotten away with by still being right in that play-in mix. Had they won those games, they would be in the sixth seed right now. But they're not going to be able to continue to do that, I don't think. I think some of these teams are going to win more. So it's just the urgency. Even just watching last night's game, I wonder if people felt that. And I wonder if like the team itself sort of felt that. And oh, wait, these teams aren't just all going to keep losing games. And we're going to be able to just coast into the 7 or 8 seed at best. So that, I just wanted to layer that into all of this.
Amen. I'm so glad you brought that up. We've been playing with fire all season long. One of the big storylines of this season is messing around and putting yourself in a situation where something stupid could lose the game for you. One play, right? Like the eating up all of our margin for error has been one of the big storylines of this season. And that's absolutely the case. Minnesota balled out. Like Julius Randle was on fire. He had, I think, 56 points in that game. Watching that game, it was a really high level game, but like Torian Prince went 8 for 8 from 3. Nas Reed had this one shot. I don't know if you saw it, Mike, where he was driving across the lane, like sideline to sideline. And he like dribbled and he had a high dribble. Yeah, he had a high dribble, D. And so it's like, and Nas Reed's a big dude, right? So it's like over his head to avoid one of the swiping arms that are,
like,
you know, Bull underneath.
Did the other day.
Like a high gather.
A high gather, exactly. But he's moving sideways, so he's not going toward the rim. And so he gathers it and shoots like this running hook all in this one. And it's like a 14-footer. It's not a close shot. And he made that like it was nothing. I was like, oh my God. It was just super high
More
skill
hooks
shot.
Than Nate
and
Dogg.
That's right. And so like Minnesota, one of the things I love about Anthony Edwards is he's a legit two-way guy. He's going to give you high level play on both ends of the floor. They've really coalesced into an identity with Cat out that makes way more sense than it does with Cat in. And so, yeah, I feel that level of urgency too, Mike, and that's why these discussions about the like sticking with the things that work, being able to identify like, hey, this was our original plan, but these are the things that actually work together. And so some closing numbers on Wenyan. Darius brought up the pairing with AD. The pairing with LeBron, he's also the best net rating guy alongside LeBron, plus 13.6 in 256 minutes. So yeah, of all of the players that have 150 plus minutes with LeBron, Wenyan has the highest net rating. Another thing I wanted to shift our focus to along this lines of identifying things that work, we finally found a three-guard lineup that is really humming, and that's the D'Angelo Russell, Dennis Schroeder, Austin Reeves group. D'Lo and Schroeder in particular as a two-man group have been great. Coming out party of Austin Reeves has happened sort of within this environment, which is kind of counterintuitive because you'd think two other ball handlers would take the ball out of his hands. And it did at the end of the Dallas game. There were a couple times it was like, let's have Austin run the play and try to get the ball to 80. Anyway, a three-guard lineup that's really kicking some ass. And Wenyan is in these groups, Rui's in some of them as well, where it's like two bigger guys at the 4-5 spot to kind of make up for how small you are at the guard spot. Some of the best ball movement I've seen in years from this team has happened in the last few games with the bench groups in particular. So I'd love to hear what you guys are seeing there.
I think Dennis is a guy who could really comment on this because he was part of another great three-guard group when he played for the Thunder. One of their best lineups all season was the lineup that he played in with Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as their three-guard group, and they sort of carried the Thunder that season to a really surprise season, which ended up netting the Thunder even more assets when they were able to then ship off Chris Paul again, like, oh, the reclamation project, OKC Thunder, recouping draft picks on every trade that they make. But Dennis, I think, this is not new territory for him. And one of the things that I've appreciated about Dennis is that he is showing way more flexibility as a player than what he's been given credit for really over the course of his career, because he's almost always looked at through this lens of like this on-ball player and he can only be effective with the ball in his hands. But he is defending his tail off regardless of whether or not he's using possessions offensively or not. He is spotting up and hitting threes again, which is super helpful. And as the guy who can operate as both a strong side or a weak side player, who is an attack and downhill player, that adds an element to this that Austin does that too. And D'Lo is less of that. So he is the guy who floats around a lot along the perimeter, but has such gravity as a shooter that he is drawing guys out. And it's just a very good mix of skill sets and players offensively, Mike, where they're able to score, they're able to play with pace, and they're all good enough passers and shooters. Like, Dennis isn't a great shooter. He's the worst of the bunch, but he is good enough at that, especially as a pull-up shooter, that it's just nice to see all of these guys playing off of each other and none of them feeling too hungry for the ball that it throws off the dynamic between them. They all seem generous enough with the rock, right? Where it's just like, okay, well, I can get mine, then this guy gets his, and it's all coming within the flow, and it's just great to see.
No doubt. I think that when you have bench players like Austin and Schroeder, who both can raise their level some, and then who also both play well with one of the starters, in this case we're talking about Russell, but I'm also just thinking of now as to tie in the earlier part of the pod and thinking of, all right, maximizing minutes and winning Gabriel, and how do you get to some more bigger lineups? Well, if you have a really good bench like that, one thing you can do is go to them a little bit earlier, and then, you know, and then basically, instead of playing, if it's Malik and he starts out great and he hits a couple threes, okay, extend the minutes that day. If Troy Brown, who is always seems to start off well and hit at least two of his first three threes, that seems like what he's been doing lately. But those spots can also be, those minutes, I think, can also be given more in certain cases to some of that bench group that's playing well. So that's a little bit aside from the point of the bench group playing well together and sort of how that fits within the context of how the Lakers are going to play and how they're going to win games. And I think that my biggest point, though, would just be Austin is the player still that needs to be the one that's playing more. And that, I think, has become just so obvious. That last game put a kind of a final nail into the coffin of like what Austin's upside and whether or not he should be playing bigger minutes. And so I want to kind of kick that question back to you, thinking that Austin has shown that he can do more pretty consistently. Would you tweak anything, and when he comes in, or how many total minutes he gets and the guys that he plays with within this context?
So I would max Austin's minutes, and I think that we are. The one thing that kind of plays in the back of my mind, though, is the when we've done that in the past, although it's often been in a different role, he's been more of a defensive centric guy. And I think it's harder to be like a 32 minute per game guy as mainly a defensive guy than an offensive guy. Just we've seen a decline in that. And so max him out to the point of it being prudent and not burning him out, you know, where 8 games from now, he's just totally gassed. But yeah, he is the guy that's part of the reason I like him coming off of the bench, is giving him his own unit and his own, like, he is obviously a closing guy. And the idea long-term of having D'Lo, Austin, LeBron, and AD is kind of the core four to build around is very exciting. Just a couple of numbers with AD on the floor and without LeBron are the three highest partners in terms of net rating alongside AD are Wen and Gabriel plus 25.1 in the 84 minutes. Then Austin Reeves at a plus 7 in 494 minutes. Then D'Angelo Russell 6.7 in 212. And so this whole idea we've talked about for years, D, of skill guards reflecting well off of our stars, both of those guys have good numbers in, you know, in a small sample with D'Lo and a larger one with Austin, both LeBron and AD have great numbers alongside them. It really supports that point of kind of these versatile guards who can do a bunch of things. And in Austin's case in particular, bring something on the defensive end as well. I just think that we have found kind of the right formula, even if it's very late in the season.
No, well, 100%. It's not rocket science, I think, to say like your most well-rounded players should play the most. And so,
yeah,
Like, I mean, right? Like,
but this argument against Beasley, right? Like, I'm very frustrated about Beasley right now.
No, Beasley. So here's the thing is Beasley is slotted best when LeBron is in the game. And yes. Vando. So here's the thing is that Vanderbilt is versatile enough, both offensively and defensively, that he brings things to the table even without LeBron in the game. But when it's only Vando and AD as the only two bigs on the court, Vanderbilt's utility fluctuates too much. And he can be overtaxed in ways that lessen his success rate. It's like, I wrote this in the piece that I alluded to earlier, but Vanderbilt is a plus 40 in the three games that he played in where LeBron was available, right? Mm-hmm. So that was the New Orleans game right before the All-Star break. It was, and then the game Golden coming State. Right out of the All-Star break, right? With the, and then the Golden State game and then the Mavs game, right? Mm-hmm. But overall, since being acquired, Vanderbilt's a minus 34. It's the worst plus minus on the entire team since February 11th. So Vanderbilt was acquired on February 9th in a trade. He did not play until February 11th when all the players became available except for Bamba. So since February 11th, he's a minus 34, Mike. But in those three games with LeBron, he's a plus 40. So that means in all the rest of the other games that he's played in, he's a minus 74.
It's been bad.
And that's mostly at power forward. And it's mostly in these lineups where he's not being supported well enough. But in the lineups where he's with AD in general, those groups still have a positive plus minus. So what is that telling me? It's telling me that there are other elements within these lineups that are dragging the groups down. And so to get back to the point, I'm not going to blame this on Beasley, but I will reiterate the point. If you play your most well-rounded players the most minutes, then the odds are you're going to have more of the skills covered on the basketball court and what you need to have on the basketball court in order to win games and win those stretches. And Beasley is the one player in the 10-man rotation who is not going to impact the game very much unless he's doing his one skill well. Right. And so Beasley's skill as a shooter can help other players. Right. Because his spacing and the gravity that he has coming off actions is real. But he's not a high level passer. So he's not making the Korver pass. I call this the Korver pass. Right. When you come off of a screen and two come at you, Korver was great at, like, I got two on me. I'm throwing that pocket bounce pass to the guy who just screened for me.
He was also 6'7", right?
Yes, 100%. And Korver was great at Creighton in college. He was like an all-court player who then came into the NBA and was just like, hey, you're not going to get to do all of that stuff anymore. You just have to shoot, right? Anyways, so Beasley's not a great defensive player. He's not a great passer. And he can score in isolation, but that's not really what you want from him. But if he's not then hitting his jump shot, then his utility continues to fall and fall and fall. There's no other player in the projected 10-man rotation, which would include Wenyen Gabriel in my projections, that you can say that about, where if they're not doing one thing, the thing that they do best, that they're not impacting the game, right? And so Wenyen's motor is always going to help. Whether or not he's getting a bunch of rebounds, him just crashing into guys and being active is going to help. And you could say the same thing about Troy Brown. His jumper doesn't need to be falling for him to be effective. And we all know that, like, D'Lo's got passing skill as well as his shooting skill. Austin does all of these things. Dennis is a very good two-way player. On and on and on and on and on. Even Rui's the closest thing to this idea of, like, being closest to, like, oh, well, if his jumper's not falling. But even these conversations that the coaches have had with him, Mike, about, like, getting after it on the backboards and being more of a presence on the interior defensively, he's 6'8", 250 pounds. He's going to help in other ways just by being a bigger player. And so I'm not saying you have to remove Beasley entirely from the rotation, but if you're looking for where to, in the spirit of do what works or what's working best, Troy is the pivot player of the guy who is now playing small forward, who is actually a guard. If you want to get another forward into the rotation, it's likely going to come by sliding one of the threes into a two spot and removing one of the guards. And it's funny that we're right back to this conversation that we've had almost all season, which is like, where can you remove a guard from the rotation in order to play a bigger player? It's still there.
Even we've with resisted the success, it the whole time
too. Yeah, but at least now there's a three guard group that you can rely on that you feel That's good true. About, right? Yep. It's not these janky three guard lineups that were not holding up their end of the bargain. So there's a lot to digest still. I'm glad that we're doing this on a day off, Mike, because we can talk like this forever because there's so many interesting things to still talk about with the Lakers as they head into this last 10 game stretch.
I was watching the Kings game last night and just as a final point here and thinking, all right, well, what's the biggest reason why the Kings are where they're at in the standings? And it's health. Like that's the biggest thing. Like they get credit for a lot of things, but you know, Fox and Sabonis have played and really on through the rest of the roster. Herter just got hurt, but it looks like he's going to come back. And so I'm in the middle of doing this right now. I stopped before we started recording, but I wanted to just see the percentage of the games that the two best players have missed. And so far I'm about halfway through and LeBron and AD have played less than any other duo. Top two guys, 47 games for LeBron, 46 for AD. So all of these conversations that we've had, I think we're so used to having these conversations at this point, but it's like, well, Vanderbilt in this lineup and Beasley in this one. Well, if LeBron and AD are there, all that stuff is different. And it's not, it's in one way, it's an excuse, right? And you still have, he's not going to come back for the next, whatever it is, however many games. And the Lakers have to find the best way to win them. It's just a very frustrating element to what not just this season, but the last couple have been. And it's all of these teams that have been, whenever they've had one of their other stars out, or if they have two stars, some teams only have one, you know, they're not above 500 almost ever. And that's what the Lakers have been, you know, recently without LeBron. So I just wanted to toss that one in there as well. And that like these, it is harder to find the best and most optimal groups when you're missing a player that makes that much of an impact in the NBA. And that's the spot the Lakers have been in basically all season.
It does, but it's our job. It's what needs to happen for one. And for two, if and when we do get those two guys back, we'll be so much better for learning and realizing these things. Because, for example, one of the main topics on this pod was AD and Wenyan Gabriel. There's going to be a part of every single game all the way up through the NBA Finals, if everything works out perfectly, where AD's on the court, but LeBron James is not. And understanding the things that we're good at in those circumstances and when we're not and why and what kind of teams they work against, like these smaller, tall type teams that like Dallas and Orlando are similar in that they have some height and length, but they're not particularly strong. Yeah, maybe that is a team that we can just bully with AD and Wenyan, but maybe against a bigger, more physical team, we need more skill out there. We want to pull them out to the perimeter, but learning this and answering all of this, yes, of course, it would be a lot easier if LeBron and AD were both there and everything was humming, but that's our puzzle to solve. And if we do, to me, there's a big reward at the end of that where you put LeBron James and AD clicking on top of a team that knows how to play together and why, and you're in business. And the surrounding standings environment has given us so many opportunities. I feel like we're right at the precipice of blowing it, but like it's there. And it's why this sort of stuff matters. It is, if you want to take advantage of the opportunity, you got to kind of fuss over things like this. All right, we've gone a little long. We will be back tomorrow to preview a huge game against the Phoenix Suns. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot.
plays an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.